Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and once again, want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy life, your busy schedule, to join me on the broadcast today. We are almost through the month of October. It is Monday, October 22nd, 2018. Do you know we're getting closer and closer to the holiday season, Thanksgiving, Christmas? Here in Florissant, the temperatures have been up and down, mid-50s, in the 60s, then down to 40, then down to 39. It's a roller coaster ride, but make no mistake, fall is about to fade into the distance, and we'll deal with the harsh winter sooner than we want to. Today on the program, I have a very special guest in about a half an hour. Her name is Naila Amin, and she is originally her and her family are from Pakistan. And we're going to talk about child forced marriages. That is something that happens very often in Pakistan, but did you know that this is a problem here in the United States? The incredible abuse, the human rights atrocities. And Naila Amin has a foundation she's going to talk about and discuss how we can do something about the laws in states to change this tragedy. She's going to also share with us about her experience as being a child bride at the age of 15. And so we're going to talk about this issue because maybe it's something you haven't thought a lot about or heard a lot about in the news. But my friend is making the news with her actions, with her other human rights activists that join her. And we will discuss this issue and talk about the reasons why the laws need to be changed on a federal level to ban child marriage and why that's so important. But before we do that interview in the next 25 minutes, I want to talk about Rahane. All this month has been Rahane Jabari month. For those of you that may have not tuned into the broadcast on a regular basis, it's a book I wrote called Rahane, A Beautiful Fragrance. It's the story of a 26-year-old Iranian girl who spent 7 years in prison in Iran, being tortured, humiliated, simply because she defended herself against a government rapist. This was an international story, and on October 25th, 2014, Rahane lost the battle in the early morning hours in Tehran. It is a story that has absolutely transformed my life. I have talked with the family members, with the mother, with Rahane's daughters, and our sisters, I'm sorry, and spent many months researching this, talking to them, compiling information, taking Rahane's prison letters and transforming those letters into a novel. And the result is this book, Rahane, A Beautiful Fragrance. It's been out on Amazon in paperback and Kindle since March of 2016 and has made an impact on the Iranian world as well as many people here that live in the States. I read this book to bring awareness to another tragedy going on, especially in Iran, where women are treated like second-class citizens. Their stories are not believed. In the end, Rahane's interrogators did their best to force her to change the story so that this man's reputation in Iran could be secured, that he really wasn't a rapist. Just say he didn't rape you, Rahane. Rahane refused to recant her story and thus was subject to being hanged. It's a story that's absolutely transformed my life, and this morning I want to continue reading from this book. I want to read to you a supernatural encounter that happened while Rahane was in captivity. It is from one of her unpublished prison letters that never made it out on the internet like the rest. But I was able to secure this experience from her mother, Shole. It's something that is unbelievable. And yet Rahane tells us this incredible story that happened to her while in prison. It significantly transformed her spiritual life. And so what I'm going to do this morning is read to you this experience. And I want you to know that this young girl was one of the most bravest, courageous Iranian women. She is a symbol of hope for all Iranian women because she stood strong as a mountain and refused to give in to this evil regime. And although she paid for it with her life, I believe 100% that she is safe at home in the arms of Jesus. I want to read to you from my book, Rahane, A Beautiful Fragrance, page 191. The other women in her cell were now sound asleep. It had been lights out for 10 minutes now. It was 10:15 p.m., but Rahane was still wide awake. She couldn't sleep. Her mind was filled with tormenting, racing thoughts. She quickly grabbed a book she had borrowed from the library. It was the author Al Jazeera, entitled Inti Memories, the story of the formation of Singapore. Rahane hoped it would be meticulous and boring reading, just enough detail to relax her mind and cause her to drift off to sleep. She could feel her body begin to relax, her eyelids becoming heavy. Suddenly, a young girl stood next to her bunk bed. Her bright appearance startled Rahane. At first, she thought it was one of her cellmates sleepwalking, but the face of the young girl was completely unknown to her. Rahane had never seen her before. The book fell out of her hands, and immediately the girl began speaking to her. The young girl began to speak about Jesus as if she personally knew him. She spoke about his love and compassion and explained that he had died on the cross to forgive all of her sins. Rahane was shocked. She sat up, interrupting the young girl. "Don't you know that you can't roam the corridors after lights out?" The young girl smiled warmly at Rahane. "I'm a newcomer. I am not aware of the rules and regulations, Rahane." A cold chill shot through Rahane's body. How did you know my name? The young girl's face glowed once again with a warm and compassionate smile. I have heard stories about you, she answered. Rane began to laugh and then covered her mouth, careful not to wake up her cellmates. The young girl looked intently in Rahane's eyes. You must read books, but not every type of book. Then the young girl gently touched Rahane's hand with hers. Rahane opened up her hand. She carefully placed something shiny in it, and then, like a flash of lightning, disappeared from her cell. Rahane shrieked and fell back on her bunk bed. Her hand was trembling in fear. Slowly, she opened it up and gazed down at her sweaty palm. Lying in the center of her palm was a small metal cross. Rahane was astonished. She frantically looked around her cell. The young girl had mysteriously vanished. Rahane trembled with fear. Beads of sweat rolled down her cheeks. She nervously stuffed the cross underneath her pillow and collapsed under the sheets. Rahane slowly opened up her eyes and took a deep breath. For the first time in weeks, she felt refreshed, as if a heavy weight had been lifted off of her. She felt alive again. Last night had been the best night's sleep she had experienced in a very long time. Even before she could sit up on her bunk bed, the images of the Christian girl flashed across her mind. Had it just been a dream? Did she really see her? Then Rahane remembered. She pushed her hand underneath the pillow and felt something. Anxious to see what it was, she grabbed it and opened up the palm of her hand. Rahane's eyes grew wide with astonishment. It was the metal cross. It hadn't been a dream. It had been a real experience. Why me? Why this cross? The questions raced through Rahane's mind. I must find this girl, Rahane vowed with a determined tone in her voice. Once more, she gazed down at the metal cross in the palm of her hand. Suddenly, she was immersed with feelings of tranquility and peace. The dark clouds of despair seemed to melt away. In that very moment, Rahane felt cleansed. She felt whole again. The feelings of brokenness were gone as she gazed intently at the tiny metal cross in her hand. What does it all mean? Rahane pondered within herself. Why did this Christian girl visit me? The brokenness and despair that had tormented her soul seemed to fade away the more that she gazed at the cross. Rahane felt healed for the first time since her captivity in prison. This morning, she had a mission, to find the Christian girl and to thank her. After getting dressed, Rahane met up with her cellmates and shared her amazing experience with them. They were shocked by her story and spent all morning asking her questions while they frantically searched for the young Christian girl. Yet at the end of the day, the mysterious visitor was nowhere to be found in the prison. Now Rahane was determined to take the next step. The Christian girl had admonished her to read books, but not every type of book. Calling her mother on the phone, Rahane asked her to bring her a Bible, but Sholi explained that would be impossible to fulfill her request. It would be too dangerous to smuggle a Bible into prison during visitation. Refusing to give up, Rahane met with an old friend who had been with her in Evan prison. Her old friend Fatima agreed to talk to someone in the library and promised to get her a copy of the Bible in Persian. A week later, Rahane was once again relaxing in her cell with a beautiful maroon copy of God's Word in her hands. She had a hunger and thirst now to discover what God had revealed in his book. She knew very little about Jesus or Christianity and was now anxious to learn. For 2 weeks of nonstop reading, Rahane devoured every word, every story in the Bible. Her heart had been warmed by the vision of God as told by the biblical writers. Holding the Bible against her chest, she was troubled by the reality that thousands of men and women had been tortured and killed for believing in this precious ancient book. The more Rahane read, the closer her heart felt to the presence of the divine. After reading through the Bible twice, Rahane had a profound feeling of freedom deep down inside of her soul. Even though she was physically a prisoner, spiritually, she had discovered a new beginning, a burning freedom, and a fresh vision of hope after reading the Bible. It's a miracle. I now have hope once again, Rahane rejoiced with herself. I now believe in a God who loves us, she proclaimed, a God who loves us and will never leave us. Rahane had experienced an incredible miracle in her heart. She could now forgive. She decided to let go of all of the hatred and bitterness in her heart that had imprisoned her for so long. Rahane could now forgive even her brutal interrogators. The Bible had given her the power and grace to forgive those who had physically and emotionally tortured her. Forgiveness had cleansed Rahane's heart and soul. The black clouds, the chains of despair, had been broken by God's word. She felt like a new person, a butterfly that had emerged from its cocoon in the midst of death and captivity. Rahane had been born again into a living hope that would never fade away. This is from my book, Rahane, A Beautiful Fragrance. I want to tell you something. Before I met Sholé, I knew nothing about this story, but I had faithfully prayed for almost 3 months every night in the chapel of the hospital where I worked. I prayed especially the night of her execution. When I finally met Sholé, I said to Sholé, I want to share with you something, Sholé. I've been praying for your daughter. I'm so sorry and broken that she was executed, but I want to assure you she is safe at home with Jesus. Sholé was completely undone by that statement. How do you know this? And then she shared with my Iranian friend this letter that had given her hope, and now I had confirmed in Sholé's heart what she had been thinking all along. What happened to Rahane is not unusual. In the history of Christian martyrs, there have been reports of angelic visitations. You can see in the Bible an angel opened up the prison doors and Peter was set free. When he ran to the house where they were having a prayer meeting and they saw him at the door, they didn't believe that. How could that be true? Yet they were praying for his release. And there he was at the door. We see that angels play a pivotal role in the Bible as God's messengers. I have no doubt at all what happened to Rahane was a supernatural visitation of an angel. The result is very clear. Before that visitation, Rahane had no hope. She was troubled and imprisoned with bitterness and unforgiveness. After she got a hold of a copy of the Bible and she had to discreetly read that in prison, it would mean real trouble for her. She read through the Bible in her prison letter, she said, 2 times. And she said, quote, I now believe in a God of love who forgives us and will never leave us. I believe with all my heart that visitation caused Rahane to be born again. I believe in that prison she became a Christian. And although she could not verbally acknowledge that, it would be too dangerous in an Iranian prison. And that's probably why most cases, why that letter was never published online. It would have been a real problem for her if the regime would have gotten a hold of this letter and read that she read the Bible. It would have been much more difficult for her before her execution. And so Rahane, using a lot of wisdom, did not talk about that. But it was after her execution that this letter became available. When I wrote this part of the book, I was in tears. Even though this happened several years before I even prayed for Rouhani, this happened, I believe, in 2011, about 3 years before her execution. God knew then I would be praying for her salvation. And it was as if God opened up my eyes after her execution through this letter and through the writing of this book. It was his way of saying to me, your prayers were answered long ago. And it was the most incredible experience I've ever had writing that chapter. This Thursday on the Cross in the Desert, I'm going to have a special dedication program to Rouhani Jabari. It's been now 4 years since her execution. I will have this program this Thursday on the Cross in the Desert. I will read the quotes from my book, Rouhani's prison letters, and the things people have said about her. And then I will read the execution chapter and talk about her impact on the world. And so I really hope that you will put some time aside and join me on this Thursday, the fourth anniversary of her execution, for this very special program. I want to share with you right now a brand new song from Chris Tomlin. It's called, from his LP or CD, Holy Roar. It's a song called Nobody Loves Me Like You. Rouhani discovered the love of Christ in a dirty prison cell in Tehran. And as you listen to this song, realize the love of God through Christ is the most beautiful unconditional love in the universe. Let's listen. from his latest project, the CD, Holy Roar. That is Chris Tomlin, Nobody Loves Me Like You, brand new music from him. Want to read a few statistics to you this morning as I await my guests. This will kind of set the stage for what we're going to talk about. It's estimated that 21% of girls in Pakistan are married before the age of 18. Child marriage in Pakistan is connected with tradition, culture, and customary practices. It sometimes involves the transfer of money, settlement of debts, or exchange of daughters. And this is kind of a law, an Islamic law, I would say, that is put together by a council of elders. Social and gender inequality, a desire to control women's sexuality and protect family honor, economic hardship, and a lack of awareness of the harmful impact of child marriage are common driving factors. Pakistan's Child Marriage Restraint Act, which is CMRI 1929, sets the legal age for marriage to 16 for women and 18 for men. In May 2017, the National Assembly rejected the draft Child Marriage Restraint Act for the second time. That proposal would have increased the legal age for marriage from 16 to 18 nationwide. Now, in February 2017, the Parliament adopted an amendment to the penal code that would toughen punishment against child marriage. Offenders face a minimum of 5 years in prison and may serve up to 10 years. They also face a fine of up to 1 million rupees, which is equivalent to about $10,000 in our money. So there are things happening apparently in Pakistan to legislate against this tribal practice, I should say, customary, traditional, cultural practice. I wrote a book about 3 years called 3 years ago called Prisoner of Her Culture. Prisoner of Her Culture is the story of a young girl. She was a brick maker, forced to make bricks by her father to settle a family debt to pay off some money, and was forced to be a child bride to settle a family dispute. This happens in Pakistan, but hold on, the problem is also here in the United States. And that's the subject of our interview this morning. We're going to talk about the problem of child marriage, the impact it has on the young person, on the young girl, the impact it has on her life. Girls are still playing with dolls, it seems, and just becoming teenagers, and they're sold away in this practice. Well, this gets into the whole subject of human trafficking, and there are so many things that are associated with child marriage that's very brutal and inhumane for young girls. And so this subject, I think, is very important for us to understand this morning. In my book, Prisoner of Her Culture, I share the story of Sakina. She was a forced child bride in a forced marriage. She had no choice, but she grew up to be a fighter, a survivor. And that's exactly what our guest is all about. She's a survivor of forced marriage, and we're going to discuss this issue and learn exactly what you and I can do as listeners to help the cause and to make the laws be changed so they become federal laws. I think New Jersey is only the second state to have a bill against early child marriage, and so that's very, very significant. This program is always dedicated to human rights. I want to welcome my guest, Nayla Amin, right now to The Cross in the Desert. Good morning.
Hi,
Nayla,
everybody.
And welcome. Hello, Nayla. I was just sharing some statistics with our audience about child marriage and forced marriage in Pakistan, but you have quite a story I want you to share a little bit about here on The Cross in the Desert. About your story when you were 8 years old, you were engaged, and at 15,
yes,
you became a child bride, and you're a survivor of that. Tell us about this situation and how this changed the course of your life.
Unfortunately, it was a very grim situation. You know, I'll be 29 on Wednesday, and looking back at it, I still can't believe it was me. It affects me every day. Up until last night, I had insomnia, and that's, you know, it's caused by all these reactions because your body goes into trauma mode. So to start off a little bit about myself, I come from the remote area of Pakistan, the Pashtun, and at the age of 8, I was promised off to a first cousin because I have an American passport, and it was done years, you know, years like this. It was going on. It was just a tradition, and nobody dared to break it. But of course, here I was born, and I said, this is not what I want. And I always knew this is something I didn't want. And then at, I did like a little mock trial wedding just so he can I can be legally married under Islamic law. And then when I came to America, I applied for him to come to America. And can you believe the laws of the U.S. would allowed a immigration officer to process my paperwork at the age of 14 to invite this man to come here who is 13 years older than me? Isn't that ridiculous to you? That in this
It is inhumane, but as a result of your experience, things are happening here in the United States. I was mentioning before you came on that we tend to look at this as a problem in the Middle East and it's in Pakistan. But, Nayla, this is a problem right here in the United States that you're doing something about and trying to change.
Absolutely. Just in the middle of June, I was protesting in New Jersey. I've been protesting for the past 3 years to pass the bill to raise the minimum child marriage age to 18. I believe it was as young as 14 or 16 in New Jersey with parental consent, which to me is ridiculous. No child and nobody, you're not in your right mind. I'm 28, about to be 29. I'm just coming into who I am, what I am. Now I could be maybe a wife, still not 100%. But how to do that to a child is just inhumane. The United Nations condemns it as a human rights violation. And Delaware was the first state this year, 2018, to make it 18 with no exceptions. And middle of June, I was invited to the governor's office because I protested so hard in the middle of June. I lost my voice. I actually slept overnight to stay and convince the one assemblyman who didn't want to put the vote in. And I slept in New Jersey. And the next morning, I went to his office and I shared my harrowing experience with him. And I said, we cannot continue to steal the sunshine out of any more girl's soul and life. We can't do that. I was telling my friend that day, I'm crying, I'm upset because I have PTSD as a result of this, mental illness as a result of this poverty. It comes with so much stuff. I was telling my friend, we can't damage our children anymore because they grow up to be damaged adults. We can't do this to our children anymore. We must speak love into our kids. We can't do this to our kids. And for me, it took a part of me away that I will never get back. I never got to experience life or, you know, just a prom date or just anything. Like, it's the little things in life. And that's why now I fight tirelessly. And at the age of 26, I incorporated the Naila Amin Foundation, which I must say over the past 3 years has come a long way. And I'm hoping within the next year or two, I will have enough money set up so I can put a down payment on a house and make it into a shelter. That's how the laws in Nassau County work in Long Island. So I will be the first shelter in the United States to house girls under the age of 18. Because as you know, I fought 3 years in New Jersey alone to make it bill 18. I have 48 more states to go in. I don't think in my lifetime I could alone do it. So I think that we need to call on our legislation, call on our Senate for better a federal law. This is ridiculous. I don't care what anyone says. There is nothing or anyone can say. I have lawmakers tell me, well, what about the poor girl who's pregnant and 16 and wants to get married? Why should we steal her right to get married? And I said, excuse me? Listen, if she wants to get pregnant, she can be an unwed mother. But that, again, just stems from it's just ridiculous. So you get her married, tied up to shut society up because she's an unwed mother. That makes no sense. You're setting her up for failure. You're setting the girl up for failure.
Mm-hmm.
It comes with a life of, you know, mental illness. And I can go on and on and on. And I just want to say that I have a client right now who reached out to the Naila Amin Foundation, and as we speak, there is a girl right now in the Bronx locked up in her house because her parents found out she had a boyfriend, and I can't do anything because she told me I don't want to get the cops involved, and I can't go to her house without the cops because I can't put myself at risk. I don't know what these people have in their house. So it's just really, really hard. And that's the hardest part of my job, is asking the girl, do you want to leave? Do you want my help? But my help comes with me taking you from your family, which a lot of these girls are not ready to do. So it just, it's just very complex.
I hear your pain in your voice, and you have set before our listeners the result, the psychological ramifications of this early forced child marriage. And what I want to do is I want our audience to understand the reasons why. Let's go back to Pakistan for a minute. Why would your family force you to get married? What was the reason for forced marriage in Pakistan? I read about poverty, money, tradition. Tell us why, first of all, a young girl has no voice and she's forced to marry.
Over there in Pakistan, it is totally against the laws of the religion. They go by tradition, and for thousands of years, my mother was 14 when she got married. She didn't even have her period. So this just shows you that they've been doing this from generation to generation, because girls are considered not even third class citizens, like more like eighth class citizens, because we're considered garbage. We're nothing. We're just baby making machines, food making machines. That's all we are. And I would say blame it on the tradition, blame it on the culture. But now I come from a remote village, and what all of this stems from is lack of education. If these people had been educated, this would not go on. Because of what I went through, now my village, I went after 12 years last year because I had to go back into the mouth of the tiger. I had to go put that 15-year-old girl to rest. So I took it upon myself to go back to Pakistan, and I noticed a change in the village. People, because of education, where now the girls, I see a trend that they're getting married 18 and 19, which to me is old, which is great, because it's like, I know it's not great, but 18, 19 is better than 13 and 12. So
right.
My story really changed the outlook of a lot of villagers' eyes, but it all stems from them not having education. The girl's considered a burden because she can't work. They don't allow them to go out. So they figure, oh, it's an extra mouth to feed. Well, let her go work for her food, you know, so she becomes a slave for her husband. So
the
it's
thing
a
that,
cycle.
Yeah, you're right about the tradition and the culture. The thing that's frightening in all of these situations, that if the young girl decides, I'm not going to do what my parents say, I'm going to find someone I really love, and they break away from that agreed marriage, the result can be an honor killing. And it's horrible that honor killings happen in a place like Pakistan. But like you mentioned, the lack of education, the tradition, if that girl dares to break with tradition, she does it at the risk of her own life. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. It's something that I face. Luckily, I was, thank the Lord, I was able to get away, and I had the State Department, Nassau County Child Protective Services. They saved my life. The Commissioner John Imhoff, without him, Judge Ayers, I wouldn't have been here today. And you know, that's something that how many more Nilas are we going to sacrifice? And this is happening in our own backyards, ladies and gentlemen. It's right here. It could be the girl you meet at the register. It could be the woman you see walking down the block. You never know, because these girls are taught that this is okay and it's normal. And they're scared to break away because they don't want to die or they don't know anything better. It's, imagine what I went through knowing at 15 that I'm seeing to Child Protective Services, I don't want to go back home. I don't want to go to this marriage, but I have to go to foster homes. A lot of people don't want to go to foster homes. They don't want to go to residential treatment facilities. You know, they don't want to live in these homes. So they just, you know, decide to stay with it. And I notice in my work, a lot of women reach out to me. They're in it, and they tell me they can't leave because they don't want their mom or dad to have a heart attack. It's a lot of emotional blackmail, too, that's, you know, they put a lot of burden on the female. And I look at my nieces who are growing up in this household, and then I look at my son who's the same age growing up in a Pakistani-American household, and there is a world of difference. My son still has his innocence. My niece, she has no innocence. Her innocence is gone.
You have laid out a good case of the ramifications of this whole process, the psychological guilt that's put on the young girl, even though she wants to reach out to you, she wants help, she's desperate, there's that innate fear that if she dares, goes against her parents' wishes, or the result that she would be in a foster home. This is really a battle for their souls, for their existence. And as you've pointed out, a young girl growing up, going to high school, going to first prom, living life normally as a teenager, this early childhood marriage destroys their life. And as you pointed out, it leaves a lot of emotional, psychological baggage for you.
Absolutely. I'm still picking up the pieces of my life. I actually have therapy later on today, and I'm not embarrassed to say it. I own my mental illness because you know what? I wear this with – I am sick and tired of saying, I'm a survivor, survivor, survivor. Now it's about, okay, I survived it, but what are we going to do to impact change? And you must, like Gandhi said, you must be the change you wish to see in the world. And that's what I'm doing now. And that's why I have my foundation. And we're having our first fundraiser, hopefully this January. So I'm really excited about that. And I have a GoFundMe page for the foundation. It's www.gofundme.com/Naila Amin. And it's just a lot. And with everyone's help, I know I can get this going. The public has been so supportive. Governor Murphy from New Jersey was just an amazing, amazing man. I actually have a pen from the bill signing. And it just really made my heart soar to see that. So right now the focus is on what are we doing to protect our girls right here in America. And hopefully next month I will be heading over to England to launch an international campaign called Unleash Your Voices. And then we're going to basically ask Imran Khan, the new prime minister of Pakistan, that what are your intentions with honor killings and forced marriages? Because 2 weeks ago, a girl in Uttak City and her boyfriend were murdered because they were dating, an honor killing. And this is 2018. This is ridiculous. It needs to stop. So we're going to challenge the government. And I'm really scared to finally step out into the international zone because I am putting my life at risk at this point. Even now, I get threats sometimes from the really jihadist, you know, extremist people. And I never bash Islam because it's not Islamic, but I still get like death threats and it's scary. But now that I'm going out into the UK and going international, I'm really, really scared. So I hope everybody will pray for me, but I won't stop till my last breath. And this is my life. And I'm actually going to take a little bit of a break after Christmas because my health is starting to suffer. And I have developed plaque psoriasis due to everything. My system's always on run and I need to take better care of myself. And I always want to help others, but I'm slowly burning out.
I see that. Well, Naila, your story, your testimony is really incredible. As an author, I would, you know, recommend when you find the time to write about this and put that book out there, giving hope to young women. And the things that you're doing, it's amazing how God brings beauty out of the ashes of our suffering. He preserved you. He protected you for a reason. And look at the things you're accomplishing, not only something here in the States, but now you're going international and even talking to the governments of the world, the powers that be, like Pakistan. So I really admire you, and you've gone from a survivor to a strong advocate for this. Tell us a little bit about what you offer in your foundation. There might be someone listening that knows someone that's in this situation and they really need help. Tell me exactly what you offer through the Naila Amin Foundation as hope and help for young women in this situation.
What my foundation is basically focused towards is preventing child forced marriage and giving these girls a place that feels like home. Cultural competency, which is what I want to give these girls, it's something I never had when I came back from Pakistan. I was in foster care and telling these people I was a bride. They didn't understand what I was saying. And I want to offer these women psychiatric services. First and foremost, psychiatric. I would offer drug counseling. alcohol. We would put them in trade schools, and they would all be under 18. And I would even take women over 18. I would even take boys in if once, you know, my mission has expanded, because I did work with one male who survived a child forced marriage at the age of, he wasn't a child, but he was a young kid in his early 20s, and he was a Indian young man. So that just shows you that it doesn't deal with a girl. Yeah. Yeah, so I want to offer these girls a place to say, you know, make sure their mind and body's being taken care of, put them in school, see what their hopes and dreams are, and hopefully work eventually on a plan to reunite them with the family. But if it's not reuniting them with the family, I want the Naila Amin Foundation to become these girls' family. I want these girls to know that if something's happening, oh, my God, we can call Naila Amin. And as of now, I don't have the facility, the physical space, but I do have the resources. So people can reach out to me. And because of the contacts that I have, I can refer them to the right place. And for anyone out there listening that might be in the situation, there are no laws that prevent a parent from taking the child overseas. But if you feel like you're being taken and you're going to be put into a forced marriage, you put screws in your bra, you put anything metal, anything that will let the alert beep go off in TSA. So they'll take you in for a personal screening. And when they take you in for a personal screening, you use the two words, I'm being human trafficked. When you say these two words, they have to help you.
Yes, as I was mentioning, Naila, not to interrupt you, but before you came on, I was talking about how the forced child marriage and human trafficking is a huge problem worldwide. So you are involved in something that is huge and worldwide. Help is provided you. What friends, what doctors, what people surround you to help you? Do you have a board? Do you have a staff of people that are helping and assisting you to take?
I am very lucky. I went to go speak at Bayshore High School last year, and I met with a young woman named Juliet, and she is now my intern, and she is a first year student at Stony Brook, and her and Isabella is my other intern. Juliet is my assistant, basically, and Isabella does a lot of my artwork, and they're, you know, trying to do the fundraiser, and they've really been helping me out. And mind you, these are 18 and 17-year-old girls. I don't have the help of family. I don't have the help of anyone. I have my personal friend, Patricia Pastor, who I just want to say is my angel from heaven. She's been my personal attorney who represented me when I did a documentary this summer, and she's just been there for me. I have a great support system with my feminist sisters like Frady Reese from Unchained at Last, Stephanie from the AHA Foundation, Amanda. The Tahiri Justice Center is an absolute great resource for anyone that's immigrant women. That's what they focus on, is helping immigrant women, but they'll help you with anything legal. So it's just a bunch of pro bono lawyers, but I have a really good support system and friends, and my family is actually getting on board with it now. And I was telling my mother last night, I said, from now on, I'm going to do what makes Naila happy. Naila's going to be 29 years old. I said, I have plaque psoriasis, lady. I can't. I said, I have to do what makes me happy. So from now on, I told her, it's all about Naila. So I'm practicing self-love and trying to move forward with my life. I'm still picking up the pieces of my life that, you know, he stole the sunshine out of my soul. And I can only say it made me who I am, and I can go further. God put me through this so I can be put on this earth to heal others.
Yes.
And I guess that was my mission.
Yes, that's very clear to me. Now, I want people to connect with you. Oftentimes when we do interviews, Naila, we fail to really connect people with the guests, and I really want people to connect with you because I know this is a huge, widespread problem. So the number one thing I want to do is talk about your page, the Naila Amin Foundation page. It's on Facebook. What will people see when they go to your page?
They will see different statistics. They will see different pictures of me or out with the governor or protesting. They'll see words of wisdom, hope, my different speeches at different universities. And the best part about that page is people can reach me through it and ask for help. And I've been telling you, I've been getting people from all over the world just sharing their stories, some of triumph and some of fear. And it's just been one big roller coaster ride. But I pray to God that God gives me strength every day so I can fight the good fight and take it one day at a time and take care of myself in the meanwhile. And I just wish I have everybody's prayers and luck, and just pray that my foundation is successful so we have no more NYMAs.
Now, for those who want to contribute to a very just cause that will change the lives of victims of forced marriage, what is the best way people can contribute to you?
I have a GoFundMe. It's www.gofundme.com/Naila, N-A-I-L-A-A-M-I-N-N-A-F, Naila, I mean N-A-F, or if you Google my name, which is N-A-I-L-A-A-M-I-N, it'll pop up. If you want to read more about my story in details, you can Google my name, send me a request on Facebook, like my page, share, tell your friends, be aware, and share the conversation and let people know what's going on in our country and what we must do to change it. Thank you so much,
yes,
Randy.
Yes, you know, you've gotten victory this past year with New Jersey. Delaware was the first state. You are pushing for 48 more states. Do you have hope that this will happen?
I am praying to God every day. It looks like we're looking at Massachusetts next, and I believe, if I'm not wrong, I just read a few days ago, there is no minimum age in Massachusetts. There is no minimum age for a female. That is absolutely disgusting to me. That is, I want to throw up. I feel nauseous.
Well, we're going to do something about it. You can count on my support because I stand with you as a great advocate for women's rights and a survivor and someone that's doing something about the problem. You're not just talking about it. You're doing something. And, you know, I'm going to support you and pray for you and advertise on my page. For those that listen to this program, they'll have the links there and they can get in contact with you. But I really do pray for a physical and emotional healing for you because you've been through an incredible amount of stress and just abuse from what you've gone through. And you listen to the stories of victims every day. And so you're doing an amazing work, Naila, and God will be with you. God will give you the success. It's already looking like it's going to happen. And the laws here are going to change. And I support you for that, Naila.
Thank you so much. You're making me emotional from your mouth to God's ears. And it makes me emotional just thinking about it. And I hope that we can all get on board and just make it a federal law so I don't have to go protest and rally in 48 states.
Yes. Yes, I know. But I've seen some of your videos. You make an impact on me, and I think you're doing a tremendous job. I really appreciate the time that you've invested in this. I know it's really hard to talk about, to bring up all these memories, but God be with you to change the laws, to rescue victims like yourselves, and that life can be a once again sweet and beautiful for people that have been damaged all their life. I really bless you for your hard work, Naila, and I thank you so much for being a guest today on The Cross in the Desert.
Thank you so much, Randy, and thank you for the audience for listening and having me on the show to share my story. Thank you so much, Randy. Have a blessed day.
God bless you, Naila. You heard it from someone that survived. Rahane did not survive, but Naila did. And God prepared her for an amazing, amazing work. Isn't it amazing how God takes the tragedies, the sufferings in our life, and turns them to gold? Isn't it amazing he brings beauty out of suffering? And Naila can look back on her life and see that there was a purpose from the very beginning. And even though at the time she was 14 and 15 and going through this terrible ordeal, little did she know that God would protect her, preserve her, and give her a voice for women who are suffering just like she did. This is one of the most incredible qualities of our God, that he sometimes allows tragedy and suffering because he's going to bring beauty out of it. And so for those of you today that are suffering, that are hurting, and maybe you know someone that used to be like Nayla, I'm going to put the links up on my page so that you can get in contact with her and you can find hope. And this is someone that's very dedicated at the cost of her own health. This is something that's very someone that's very dedicated to see a change in the lives of women. I applaud her. I'm all for women's rights. That's why I do this program. And I think of the women in Pakistan. I think of the book I wrote. And I'm hoping one day Nayla will write her story because people need to read it, need to listen to it, need to watch it. But you need to find her on Facebook. I'm going to put the links up and so that you can have an opportunity to talk with her one-on-one and give and donate to something that is changing the lives of women all over the world. I want to thank you so much for listening this morning to this powerful testimony. And what I want to do right now is I want to end with the song, the new song by Chris Tomlin, Nobody Loves Me Like You, help you to start your day knowing there is a God that loves you unconditionally. God bless you. I will see you this Thursday for a special broadcast about Rahane Jabari. Have a good week.
Save my